my co-host, Alan Painter.
Oh, I got a promotion. Co-host.
I know.
Normally I'm cohort.
No, yeah, well, okay. If the shoe fits.
Yes. Some of the, or like the shadow, just this presence that comes in and out occasionally. Well, it was especially tough to be here today because, man, it's a nice day. And
it is.
The weekend's not looking so good. I tried to sneak out before Shannon caught me, but she caught me. So
like
here I am, and I'm darn happy to be here.
Well, and I'm excited because we're being joined by, honestly, one of the nicest guys and gentlemen I've ever met.
So, absolutely.
So I'm going to give a little introduction here to our guest. So today in the studio joining us is Dr. Timothy Powell, who graduated from Oregon State University School of Pharmacy in 1973. He attended Oregon Health Sciences University, earning his Doctor of Medicine in 1977. He completed his family medicine residency in 1980 at San Bernardino, California, a program affiliated with the UCLA School of Medicine. Dr. Powell has been American Academy of Family Practice Board certified since 1980, and he has been in private practice in Roseburg, Oregon since that time. So we got him and we've kept him. That's an achievement.
Yep.
Dr. Powell and his wife, Kathy, have raised three children in Roseburg, their son, Matthew, who is now married and practicing law, and his wife, Mary, who is an obstetrician and a gynecologist. Their daughter, Angela, is a family physician in San Jose and has given them their first grandchild. Well that's a while now. And she and her husband also have three teenagers from the Sudan. Their other daughter, Esther, lives with her husband, Jared, in Lake Oswego, where they have two daughters and one son from the Congo. So just a joyous, wonderful man. So thank you for taking time out of your oh-so-busy schedule.
Oh, you forgot one, Shannon.
What?
One of the most beloved physicians in our area.
Well, he still gets voted Doctor of the Year.
Well.
So, Dr. Powell, thank you for joining us today.
Shannon, thank you so much for having me. You know, those dates make me feel old. I realize I practiced in Roseburg now for over 40 years, so you can do the math. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you here. And so being the CEO of Evergreen and kind of the man who makes things happen over there, you are blessed with a wonderful team. I do have to tell you, every time I call over there and have to talk to anybody for any reason, they are always so fantastic and just jolly on the spot and helpful. So you have a wonderful staff.
Shannon, I did solo practice for 20 years. It's not what I wanted. It's just what folks did in Roseburg when I came. You either opened a practice and kind of did it by yourself or kept moving. I always wanted a group practice because in a good system of care, I'm a better physician. I have systems. And before, when I'd go down, everything stopped. And now I have a team, and we've been able to develop systems that I could never do when I was in private practice. So I'm just really having a good time, even though they have kind of demoted me to CEO, and I mainly sit on my butt and point. Every once in a while, they let me off the bench. I get to go see patients again for a while, and that always makes my day.
Oh, and you're so great at it. Obviously, very loved because you are still getting voted as physician's favorite. That keeps happening. And right now, we're voting on that. So he'll probably get it again this year. Just a shout out for that. So we're always so blessed to have you on the show this time of year. And you come in and tell us all the things that are happening. But we know it's kind of a big decision-making time of year. And so let's talk a little bit about Medicare and open enrollment. So we have open enrollment now from October 15th through December 7th. And I know you are holding, or Evergreen is holding meetings over there to help people find a place to come make a choice.
We are. A lot of times folks ask why we're so interested in facilitating that choice. But the fact is the choice seniors make impacts their care because affordability impacts their care. So often at other times of the year, I will see the patient and they need this type of insulin or this rheumatoid drug or this whatever, and it's not on the formulary, or somehow they just can't afford what they really need. And I always say, boy, during open enrollment in the fall, we've got to get you on a different plan. It's kind of like having a cheap telephone plan that doesn't cover well in your area. It's not very valuable. So it's really important that seniors make a good choice. And so we do really try to educate them about the choices they have.
Well, and like you said, mentioning the prescription drug aspect of it, that's very individualized. So I know that it's very important for people to individually make their choice and their selections off of their own needs. And oftentimes you're like, oh, okay, well, my golfing buddies or my best friend over here has this plan, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the best plan for you. So I love that they can find options at your meetings.
Well, they can, but our meetings are basically, we bring in really trusted independent insurance agents, Shannon, so that they can talk with them, meet them, just do a lot of education about Medicare. And then they can schedule a time, a private time, with that independent insurance agent to really break down what's going to work best. Do they travel? Do they need that kind of a consideration? Are they on these medications? Or what kind of diagnoses do they have? And what is going to be their out-of-pocket cost? Patients are always a little surprised to understand that their time with independent insurance agents is entirely without cost to them. The cost is borne by the different insurance companies that sell that, and it is so valuable. I'm reasonably well-educated as far as Medicare and the options, and yet I go through an independent insurance agent myself as I have come, because Medicare is complex, and it really does need to be individualized to your situation.
Well, you know, the Shannon's been with in the office now for 2 years, and it is so fun for me because seeing some of the people leave her office, it's life-changing. You know, it's amazing. I mean, some of these folks with tears in their eyes, how it opened up the door of that they can afford their medicine or the cost of insurance, and that's it's exciting to see, and that's why it's so critical to talk to somebody that understands that program and speak to an independent agent like Shannon.
Well, yes, when I was seeing patients just as a practitioner, so often these questions would come up and they would ask me, well, what do you recommend? What should I get? And at that point in time, I didn't have these details. I've really spent some time trying to understand this. But what was clear to me is that Medicare is a lot more complicated than most folks realize until they reach that age. They just assume, well, that's this big blanket of insurance and everybody pretty much has the same thing. And that's absolutely not true. There's also a lot of misunderstanding about what Medicare does cover and what Medicare does not cover. And most of all, there's a lack of awareness of the choices they have and the consequences of those choices. And the more I became aware of that and how that really played out in their lives, the more I made a commitment that I'm really going to educate them to make good choices.
Yes, and I really do appreciate that, because when they hear it from somebody else, it's not that you're trying to sell them something. You're trying to also do the educational piece, which is what we also try to do. So I'm very appreciative for all the efforts you put for that. So one thing that I did want to ask you about, which we get asked about quite often this year, is sometimes people, if they're on certain plans, get calls from P3. So I would love if you would be so gracious to tell us a little bit about P3 and how that works for you and with the clients.
It begins with this statement. We at Evergreen will only accept a relatively few Medicare Advantage plans. And the reason is all Medicare Advantage plans are not the same, not even close. And so we currently accept a total of 5, and those are listed on our website. But within the Medicare Advantage plans we do accept, P3 works as a facilitator. It's always hard to explain this to patient, but it's situated between the insurance company, the Medicare Advantage company, the patient, and the provider, and their job is just basically to expedite patient care. It's a collaborative relationship then. But let me give you some specific examples of how P3, and I'm so glad you asked this question, Shannon, because often we get calls, hey, I got a call from P3.
Right.
Who's that and why are they calling me?
Me as well.
Okay. Well, we do every year on every Medicare Advantage patient, we do a very comprehensive physical exam. But before we see that patient for the first time, the P3 team combs through all the patient records, and I'm meaning from every specialist, every hospitalization, every surgery, every consultation, every emergency room visit, every diagnostic study, and sometimes folks travel, so that's a ton of information. Mm-hmm. And then they coalesce all that into a sheet to bring to our information so we can look at that and address it during that visit. That's not just our records, but it's records from Arizona or wherever they were seen. I started this last 2 years, and I call it my intensive medical management services, and there's a lot of patients that we identify as just being fragile. They're very vulnerable, and a lot of times they identify themselves because they're constantly going into the emergency room or being hospitalized, or we can just see it in the visit. And we have twice a month, we have quite an extensive meeting. And in that, I have my providers, I have my nurses, I have my chronic care nurse people, my community health workers, my behavioral health people, my administrative people. But I also make sure that I have in there the P3 medical director and their social workers. And so we look at what is it, what are the issues driving this behavior? And a lot of times it's not. They have very difficult medical circumstances, but that isn't what's driving the truck. It's other social determinants of health that we can say to the insurance company, look, I realize this is the usual way you manage this. This isn't working. It's costing you a lot more money when this patient goes into the hospital. Let's set those aside and just work out a pragmatic solution. And so they help us cut through a lot of red tape. We have part of the patient-centered home is our job is to think of the patient not just in front of us, but the patient not in front of us. So we have a lot of quality metrics to identify people either a high risk or they're due for preventative measures. And our quality team and their quality team works together to make sure we don't let those people slip. And what it does at the bottom of the hill, I guess, is it aligns incentives because the insurance company, the provider, and the patient really want the same thing. They want to keep the patient well and out of the hospital. The insurance company saves money when that is. And and for Evergreen, that's right at the heart of our mission. So we sometimes need to sell that to the patient, but it's worth selling.
Well, I hope that there's some of my clients out there listening because I really have been getting a lot of questions about that due to the increase of phone calls that people get this time of year, which I understand. So,
well you know what's really amusing me because Shannon kind of shared this P3, not doing health insurance. I'm a complete rookie, so I'm learning all this as well. But the statement you just made about the team that gathers together of professionals to care for that individual. That really shows a level of commitment. I thank you for that, but that's pretty amazing that all those professionals, just because you aren't being seen doesn't mean they're not working for you. And so hats off. I had no idea. That is very impressive.
Oh, Alan, thank you. The reality of this, it's a little selfish isn't quite a word, but self-interest as well for the insurance company because a small percentage of the patients drive the majority of the cost. Now, some of that's unavoidable, and it's not that we want to prevent them from having care, but a lot of this care going back and forth to the emergency room and the hospital, there's no peace in that. A lot of times there's just a frantic worrying and scurrying about
that
isn't going anywhere and isn't accomplishing. And so we really need to get our chronic care nurses out there and say, call us first. You know, call us. We can hook you right up with your provider. What's the problem? And this avoid all that if we can, so that they whatever time they do have left can be time with respect and dignity.
That's great.
It's time for a break, so we better go and take a break. We'll be right back with more of Your Cue, sponsored by Premier Insurance.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right. Welcome back to more of Your Cue. I'm Shannon Sebastian.
And I'm Alan Painter. And happy to be here.
And we have Dr. Tim Powell, CEO of Evergreen Family Medicine, with us today. So we just got done talking a little bit about Medicare, educating us on the company P3, which might be ringing your phone throughout the year. And so maybe give them a listen. Give them a little bit of your time this year. So exciting news. I'm ready for an update, Dr. Powell. So they're going to town up there in Sutherland. Can you tell us a little bit about your Evergreen Sutherland expansion?
Oh, I just love to, Shannon. Before I get off that, I just want to make one last comment on our last topic. Every Tuesday morning from 8 to 12 at our Harvard location, an independent insurance agent will be present just to talk with folks that want to reconsider or be educated about their Medicare options. They're not trying to sell you a product or anything there. They're just explaining, educating. You don't need an appointment. Just come on in. We're going to have some coffee and some snacks for you, and we'll work you in. So until December 6th on Tuesday, 8 to 12, it's the place to be.
Place to be. Lots of good information. And P3's been there each week. So you can come meet somebody from there and find out a little bit more about that as well.
So, okay. Shannon Sutherland, this has long been on my mind. I love Sutherland. I love North County. It's gorgeous. The people are really neat there. We have been planning this since 2015, actually. We kind of got sidetracked because we ended up building the Harvard facility there and bringing in Women's Health and OBGYN, and so we kind of were delayed there. And then when we started again, it's honestly been a really tough environment to build in with inflation, supply chain problems, labor problems. It's just been challenging. And frankly, the cost of building that just in the time when we started till now has gone up about a third. So it's it's a difficult environment. Altogether, this building, which is just below the golf course, just west of Dakota Pizza there in Sutherland, is just slightly under $14 million. It's a state-of-the-art medical facility. It's going to include family medicine, urgent care, walk-in care, lab, and x-ray. And the other intention I have always had and will have is to bring some specialty care there. Although it's only 11, 12 miles from Sutherland to Roseburg, there's a lot of seniors in that area. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. That trip is a problem. So we want to bring the care to them. I had built, had planned to build before that, a total extra wing than what you're going to see. And because of cost, I had to cut that off. But the intention was I was going to try to bring specialty care, whether it be from Medford or Eugene or things we don't have here, to Sutherland, where mm-hmm. that could be. I haven't given up on that yet because I still have the plans and I just need to hook it on and build it when I can, but it's not now. So we plan to open then at the end of April of 2023. I think it's just going to be a gorgeous facility. I'm so excited about that. We're doing this, though, because, frankly, there's a need. There's a lot of unmet need. Sutherland's going to grow. I'm positive Sutherland's going to grow.
Absolutely.
And then you have all that surrounding area of Oakland, clear up to Elkton. It's just a lovely area with great access in every direction. I have to say the city of Sutherland has been so welcoming, so helpful. They've been great to work. And so we have some providers that are already chomping at the bit to get up there. They really want to get involved in the community and in the schools in that area and just really become known to the community and become good partners.
Well, one thing I'd like to thank you for is, you know, what we see typically, you'll have a business in Roseburg, and then they just say, hey, we're going to move out to the outskirts and go to another smaller town, Winston, Southern, what have you. And what they end up doing is they put out an outpost. But Evergreen is actually putting in the full bonanza. There's no shortcut of services. This isn't something, go see a doctor here and then see somebody else in Roseburg. They're rolling out the whole game to Sutherland. And that is so important that those folks up there were going to get that kind of service and commitment.
What I told my team when we started was this is going to be special. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want people from Sutherland, that area, walking in and feeling they were somehow second class.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen the some of the plans and the pictures, and you will not feel less than. I mean, you're getting the cream of the crop brand new out of the box.
I saw the building yesterday.
It's gorgeous.
It is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's just stunning. So I'm grateful because it's not just Sutherland, it's surrounding areas. Because if you imagine how far people from Elkton are having to drive, or even Reensport, maybe they'd rather have that choice. Drain, I mean, all over the place. So it's, I feel like it's your little medicine office filled with dreams. If you build it, they will come.
Well, you know, that's what I was, it's funny. The picture I had was Walt Disney.
Oh.
You know, I mean, here's a vision that you and your team have had, and for I'm sure decades, and to see it all come to fruition now, is, you know, may never be complete. Hopefully, it's not, because real dreams aren't. And to see your planning come in, it's such a blessing for our community.
Oh, thank you. This clinic will not just be aesthetically pleasing. We're going to be open 7 days a week. With our urgent care and walk-in, and also Saturday family medicine clinic, because access is such an issue. So I really want Sutherland, Oakland, and Elkton, and Yountville, and Drain to know we got you taken care of.
And I'm excited to see it. I can't wait for the opening, grand opening. So I also wanted to ask you a little bit. I know you keep up on the latest and greatest in everything and equipment and information. So would you mind speaking about the broadband infrastructure funding and how that will affect our area or impact healthcare in Douglas County?
Shannon, this can go in a lot of different directions. This is a deep passion of mine, because this can utterly revolutionize the way we provide healthcare in our county. Now, what most of your listeners probably don't know and probably don't want to know is that there was a $1.2 trillion bill, infrastructure bill, passed by Congress. I worry about that like everybody else, but broadband will receive $65 billion of that.
Wow.
Oregon will receive a minimum of $250 million in funding. Now, I'm concerned as well about the trillions of federal government spending, but I will say this. A federal government role is that of building infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And I have the providers, I have the equipment, I have the dream to provide an in-depth, incredible quality of telehealth throughout our entire county to make it healthcare even more and more available. And I can do everything except I can't build the infrastructure. I cannot. And so I think, you know, you think about Douglas County and you think, well, 5,000 square, actually over 5,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. We all know Douglas County, small town, unincorporated farming areas, all with mountains and rivers, creating distinction. About 115,000 people total. wonderful people, blue-collar workers. But the further we get out from Roseburg, the more poverty we see. That's just the reality. The more difficult mm-hmm. access is because they can't travel to see their physician. We have about 50 schools throughout there, scattered from Glendale or Days Creek right. in the south to, mm-hmm. to Elkton in the north. And included in those schools, scattered around, right now we have about 70 kids with type 1 diabetes. To a parent who hasn't conceived of this, I can't even begin to share with you how that will upset your life. To have your 6 or 7 year old now on an insulin pump where they're mm-hmm. so vulnerable. We also have 20 assisted living and nursing home facilities, thousands of seniors for whom transportation is very difficult. And when they are mm-hmm. transported, they're transported away from the caregivers and nurses that really know them. And so what I'm describing is a problem of access to medical care to our most vulnerable population. And we have a plan to bring health care to them that I'm so passionate about. But I need broadband to do that. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, and that really is exciting. I know you guys are doing wonderful things in the schools. And I can only imagine when this happens, where Evergreen will take it and go with it. So I definitely want to just say thank you so much for everything you do for our community and for coming on the show and for being here with us today. We sure appreciate your time. We know you're super busy. Yeah. And thank you for everything you do and encourage people to come out and take advantage of the opportunities that you've afforded them.
So. And Doc, thank you for having a vision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's forward-thinking leaders like yourself that is going to take care of us and our children, our grandchildren. So thank you for your vision and your passion and for loving to our county.
Oh, Alan, you're so kind. Thank you. Yes. Thank you very, very much.
Well, and thank you for being here. We'll be back in with more with Umpqua Survival here in a minute on Your Q.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to more with Your Q. Normally, this is the local business buzz, but we're kind of doing a little different today. So
we're going to be buzzing today.
We're
going to
be
sure.
buzzing, but different reasons. So joining us in here is our very own Umpqua Survivor. Carlos is here from Umpqua Survivor.
The king of the buzz.
The king of the local buzz. So also joining us is Amy Patrick, which is the policy director for Oregon Hunters Association. So, Amy, I'm going to check and see if you're here and can hear us.
I can.
Hi, thank you for taking time out of your busy day and being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Okay, so hot button topic. Here we go. Measure 114. I'm starting us out of the gate. Amy, tell us why people should vote no on this. Give us some bullet point reasons.
Oh, the bullet points are, the list is long, but I'm going to try to condense it as best I can here. the main topic or the main point to get across on this is that Measure 114 simply isn't the answer. It's not the answer to solving the criminal violence with firearms that people are concerned about. What this would do is it would only affect those who are already paying attention to the laws we have on the books and are legally purchasing their firearms. And responsible gun owners. This will do nothing to curb any of the ways that criminals obtain their firearms because they don't follow any of the laws. It's exceptionally poorly written.
Yes.
They have a section that they reference an Oregon revised statute, and that statute doesn't exist. So because it's so poorly written, if this were to pass, it would then be on the legislature to come in and fix portions of the measure itself. So that is another gamble anytime we put gun control issues in the hands of the legislature.
Right. Well, and I mean, you hit it right on the head with it being so poorly written. And that's the big problem with it. And it absolutely not doing what it's intended to be. So my thought is, and this is solely my thought, is that I can believe that somebody did this potentially with the best of intentions, but it was done so poorly, so poorly. And so it's actually an epic fail in my book. So I'm hoping that people will vote no on it, just because we just can't let things that are this poorly done go through. Or what else are we, what else is going through? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the, this is Alan. One of the things that people have to remember is this country is a republic. Yes, we vote. Yes, we have a democracy. But a republic stands up for the rights of the individual over the many. This bill will do nothing but put more impediments in front of our individuals and make it harder to exercise our Second Amendment rights. And the Second Amendment is not a lesser right. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of bugs me, is that we're putting more this vote to put more impediments for the exercise of rights. They wouldn't get away with it if it were the First Amendment, you know, Fifth, Sixth, or any others. So it's a typical government answer. Let's make a law and try to solve a problem where it's there isn't one. It's not going to address the problem.
So, Amy, I have a question for you. I know some people are having an issue with it because it's being presented as the Gun Violence Reduction Act. And I know sometimes in legislation, you guys try to fight against these names that are somewhat misleading, because we honestly don't feel like this will reduce gun violence.
Is it kind of like the Inflation Reduction Act? It doesn't reduce inflation, right?
it's named along the same vein there.
I was going to say, well, they used a lot of the same words. But so I don't know if you guys tried to address that and how, who decides how these can be named.
So just a really briefly overview of how these come to be, the, you know, ballot measures, what's the lifespan or the way that this happens is, you know, we have the initiative petition process here in Oregon. So anybody can say, I want to put something on the ballot and this is my idea. And, you know, this is what I'm going to write up. And they take that to the Secretary of State. They have to gather 1,000 kind of sponsoring signatures. So they have to have 1,000 people to say, yeah, you know, we want to know more about this. We want this to go further. And then at that point, they get a ballot summary and language. And at that juncture, then people can submit comments and say, we don't feel like what you've written here as a ballot summary or a title aptly describe what this would actually do. Now, sometimes those are successful and sometimes those are not. It's purely up to the Secretary of State's office and the Department of Justice as far as how that wording goes forward. So we did, Oregon Hunters Association did file comments on this back when it was IP-17 and it was in initiative petition process. Unfortunately, our comments were not accepted and were not deemed to change anything that was in the initiative petition at that time. So it went forward as written. And like I said, sometimes you're successful in getting the Secretary of State to change things, and sometimes you're not. So what we saw then is they collected enough signatures by this last July to get placed on the ballot. So this is what we've moved forward with. And unfortunately, even though they recognize that, like I said, that ORS is missing, and so it had errors in how it was written, they allowed it to go forward to the ballot, which, in my opinion, is very bad outcome for how our system should work. And also there were questions about whether or not this violated the single subject rule, because we have basically three very distinct things going on in this measure. They want to create the permit system. They want to create a searchable database, and then they also want to ban what they call large capacity magazines, which is 10 or more. So there's really three different and distinct things that are happening under one ballot measure. Generally speaking, that's not allowed to happen. But again, we tried to challenge that, and we didn't get any traction with that back when it was an initiative petition.
Well, one word I want to highlight, what she just said, searchable database, folks.
Absolutely.
Searchable and public.
And permanent.
And permanent.
And there is no prescription of who will have access to that information other than Oregon State Police has been charged with the creation of that database and maintaining it. But there's no prescription as to who would then have access to it. And if somebody could simply file a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act, and access to everybody's personal information and what firearms they have purchased with their permit.
And let's not kid ourselves, folks. The Bloomberg Group, a lot of these groups are going to be filing those acts. The day this passes, the paperwork's going to be in the mail. And all of our names and what purchases we made will be public. Now, I know that this bill has the ability to actually stop us from purchasing firearms. I'd like to ask Carlos from Umpqua Survival, how would this bill negate your business? What would be the effects of your business?
Well, it would impact us dramatically, mostly because a huge portion of what we sell wouldn't be legal anymore. So, I mean, we would have a large quantity of inventory that we'd have to try and sell online to states where it's not prohibited. And basically, we would just have to kind of restructure how we do business and deal with a lot of angry customers, I'm sure. Really, what the law does is it turns law-abiding people into criminals.
Now, and one thing, the fallacy about, I mean, I think a lot of people picture when they see the advertisements for this bill is AR-15s and weapons like that. Could you explain what other weapons are actually included in this?
It's everything. I mean, basically, it turns us back into the Wild West because it's 22 rifles that are tube-fed, things that were made in, like, 1943 would no longer be legal. There's, you know, every concealed carry pistol, personal defense handgun, all home defense shotguns.
Well, and it's part of it's actually, Carlos, because what I learned when I went out to your shop was what they're calling maximum capacity is actually standard.
Yes. Yeah, it's all standard.
Yeah, and so what they're calling maximum makes it sound like big and massive and militant or military is actually what the standard size and clips are for a lot of these guns that you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even some shotguns will be no longer allowed either.
A good quantity of them will be. Yeah, we've done our best to get information out there. We, one of our instructors did a video, and we posted it on our social media.
Yes, I wanted to mention that. So we're going to take a quick break. Amy, we're going to be back in just a moment here after this break and talk with you a little bit more. Back with more on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to your Q, and this is Shannon Sebastian. We're here for what's normally the local business buzz, but we have Alan Painter and Carlos from Umpqua Survival in with us today because we're talking Measure 114. And I know we are short on time, so I want to make sure we get everything out, anything and everything out we need to here. So, Amy, anything else that you'd like to say to get the word out about voting no on Measure 114?
Yeah, I think there's two other quick points that I want folks to know, and that is that this is going to cost all Oregonians a lot of money. So this is not something that's just going to be specific to firearm owners, but all the taxpayers in the state are going to be paying a huge amount of money to fund this permit system and the database. So the numbers that have been put forward for the 23-25 biennium for that time frame, the cost is looking at $15.2 million of state funds. So that's going to come out of our general fund. The legislature will put that forward for this, and it's going to go mainly to OSP with additional personnel and setting up that database, setting up the permit system. And then locally, because the permit systems have to be administered through your local law enforcement, the estimated tax burden for that same biennium is over $51 million. And so just to put that in perspective, we're going to be paying twice because we pay our local taxes, but then we also pay our state taxes. And so every Oregonian is going to be paying for the cost of this. And then the other piece that I wanted to mention really quick, and a lot of sportsmen will understand this, but some folks may not be as familiar with the Pittman-Robertson Act and how that funds wildlife conservation. So the Pittman-Robertson Act relies on an 11% excise tax on firearms, ammunition, and archery equipment. And those funds are federal dollars. They go back to federal coffers, but then they come back to state wildlife agencies specifically for wildlife conservation. And it's a huge fund that helps our Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife be able to do their wildlife conservation. And just to give you an idea of how much that generates on a national level, in the last year, Pittman-Robertson funds, they were over $1 billion. So that's a huge amount of money coming back to wildlife conservation. And Oregon would be out of luck if we passed this and our firearms purchases were stopped.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. I know your eyeballs deep into this, so I sure appreciate it. I would encourage people, if they want to know more about it and a lot of the talking points that you had mentioned, to go to the Oregon Hunters Association website, go to the Umpqua Survival website. Carlos's group put on a wonderful video on their website, but reach out and look about it and actually read this thing from start to finish. Take the time and read it, and you'll see all the little idiosyncrasies in there.
Absolutely. You know, and when, you know, everyone knows that today we have legalized hard drugs. And I think the reason is because we didn't really dig in and read that. I almost voted for it. So I would encourage people, the bill can be very confusing. Go and read the letters for and against it. That's the real world difference. And when you read the letters from the Sheriff's Association, that hits home. That really explains the effect of it. So educate yourself. Don't get hung up on just the title, which is what happened to us passing legalized drugs.
And Amy was actually at the town hall with me, and so was Carlos. You know, it was brought up that our Sheriff Hanlon has his beliefs, and we love him for it, and we support him. But it doesn't make a difference if it's the law. It's the law. And we will have the Oregon State Police and other people here. This will have to be followed. So I think a lot of people have that false sense of security. And I would just say, even though we love Sheriff Hanlon to pieces, it's like, this will be the law. And we cannot purchase a gun without those permits and without these classes that right now don't even exist.
Yep.
So first, they've got to be created.
And he's not going to be around forever, people.
And he's not going to be around forever. But first, we have to, all this stuff has to be developed, which isn't even developed. And we're all going to be sitting on hold waiting for that to happen. So.
Yep. And in the interim, we will not be able to buy a firearm. They are going to deny us the ability to buy firearms, and there's no deadline for them to get this set up. Could be a year from now.
Yeah, probably is a year and a half, actually.
So for 18 months, 2 years down the road, we will not be able to buy firearms.
Possibly. Well, hope for the best and vote no, and we'll go from there. So, Amy, thank you for being here. Surely appreciate it. Carlos, thank you for coming and for drawing another winner for the Umpqua Survival $25 gift card.
And the winner is?
Terry Rudolph from Glide. So Terry, we'll give you a call and let you know how to pick that up. Carlos, thank you for doing that and for supporting the local business buzz, which normally we shine and put a spotlight on locally owned and operated small businesses in our area during this time. But unfortunately...
Carlos. Thank you for allowing to use that time to highlight this bill.
Yeah.
Well, it's an important thing. So.
Yeah. And next week on the show, we will have Atro Health Plans. And then Carlos will be back to tell us what's going on at Umpqua Survival. And he's got some cool things going on, including your FFA event that's coming up.
Oh, yeah. We're helping out with Douglas FFA for their annual auction and banquet. It's on November 12th at Backside Brewery.
So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week, too, and how you can get involved in that and join in on that. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Amy, thanks for being here. Alan, thank you. Carlos, thank you. And until next week, y'all, you know what to do. Be kind and vote no on 114.
And God bless America.
We're out.